presentation yesterday at 6 p.m. at the airport, the Taney County Airport.
That's right.
Not the Branson Airport, where I went first. And the commissioners who have invited me to be here, and I'm grateful to them for this invitation to speak with you. I would not be here had they not invited me. The commissioners were at that meeting last evening. They have been through this presentation last night, and that caused me to reflect on this. I was talking to Sarah right before we started, and Sarah and I shared that we had a mutual affection for theater. As a high school boy, I had the lead in the school musical in Springfield. It ran on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. My mother and father came on opening night, Thursday night. On Friday, I said, "Will you be coming to the show again tonight?" And my mother said, "Who dearly loves me, Tom, we saw you last night, and you were very good, and we are proud of you. You will be no better, nor will we have any more pride in you if we go again tonight." My mother didn't see me two nights consecutively, but your commissioners have. And so I acknowledge that you've been through this before. I thank you for your patience. And I want to acknowledge that you have done something that not even my mother would do. About me, just so you have an idea of who this guy is in front of you. I accepted my first position in state government in 1977. And I worked for a Missouri state senator in the Capitol building. I was his assistant. I did that for 3 years. In 1980, I accepted a position working in the clerk's office of the Missouri Supreme Court. I was their communications coordinator, and I did that for 2 years. And then in 1982, I left the state of Missouri, and I remained away for 25 years. Initially, I went to New York City, where I continued to work for a legislator. They called their state reps in the state of New York assemblymen. And I worked for an assemblyman who had a district in the borough of Brooklyn. But he was a chairman of a state committee, and that committee was housed in the World Trade Center on the 50th floor, and that is where I worked. 50th floor of World Trade Center number 2 for a couple of years. In 1986, my life got no better. I moved to Los Angeles, and there I lived for the next 21 years. And my final 8 years in Los Angeles, I was a high school teacher. I taught in a private college prep high school, where all the students were expected to go to college, and that was the standard that we held them to. And then one day I woke up and I realized that I had entered the early autumn of my life, and I made the conscientious decision that I want to come home. And I thought of that today as I was driving through these views of beautiful Ozark Hills. This is why I want to come home, to be here. And I returned to Jefferson City only because it was the last city in Missouri where I had gainful employment, and I circulated a resume. It ended up on then the desk of State Senator Chris Koster. I did not know him, he did not know me, and he did nothing with my resume. Until he was elected Attorney General. And then he remembered this resume of a guy who had a background in government as well as being an educator, and he said, "I think I could use these talents in my office. I am not an attorney. My background was being in education as well as in government." And he wanted to create a new position for the Office of the Attorney General, which he calls Public Education Director. He said, "If I hire you, I'm going to have you travel extensively. I want you to be a teacher across this state. And your first assignment will be this. I want you to travel the state, and I want you to talk about the Sunshine Law." Looked at him quizzically, and he said, "Tom, that is perhaps the most non-complied with chapter in all the statutes." When I asked why, he said, "Well, not because there's evil lurking in the hearts of men. It's not complied with because it's complicated, Tom. It's nuanced. It comes far closer to art than it does science, and art is interpretable." So, as you probably well know, there's 114 counties in the state of Missouri. And there's the city of St. Louis. That's 115 venues. In the one-year period from March of 2009 to March of 2010, I went to 111 of those venues giving this presentation with the idea that as we educate the public as well as public governmental bodies, we will enhance compliance with this law. That is our first order of business. Let us teach the law. So I'm here to do that. But I want to acknowledge something. I've worked with this law every day of my life for 2 years. I'm surrounded by 182 attorneys, and some of them are the finest legal minds you will ever encounter. And yet there's not a day in my life, or at least not a week in my life, where someone doesn't pose a question to me to which I must say to them, "Let me get back to you." because this does require some thought and consideration, and the answers are not always obvious. It is a nuanced law. So I want to acknowledge the fact that this can be complicated, particularly if you don't have access to 182 attorneys. And I want to be able to address some of that. And I found that the best way to address that is to start by talking about the law in its philosophical format. And in order to do that, I want to draw from my days of being a high school teacher, especially when I taught American literature. No matter how gifted the student was, it was very difficult for me to get them to go on a journey with Huckleberry Finn, or to read The Scarlet Letter, or The Crucible, or any other of the wonderful pieces of literature that we studied, unless I could make that literature relevant to them. Why should we read this, Mr. Durkin? So let's start with a moment of relevance to this law. I acknowledge I entered state government in 1977. I was a senior at Drury, then college, now Drury University, in 1973. In the spring of my senior year at Drury, I became fixated on this television program that was coming to us from Washington, D.C. I'll call it a soap opera, not sponsored by Procter & Gamble. It was sponsored by the Senate Watergate Committee. And as I watched this program through a young man's eyes, I was not only transfixed, I was disillusioned, I was disappointed, I was chagrined. Well, apparently the Missouri General Assembly was watching that very same television program, because that year in 1973, the General Assembly introduced Senate Bill No. 1. It was enacted. It is the Sunshine Law. It was our legislative response to what we were seeing taking place in Washington, D.C., and we are saying, in effect, to the world, not in our state, that won't happen here. What won't happen here? On August 9, 1974, I was passing through the airport in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. At that time, my family lived in Jamestown, New York. I caught a shuttle from Jamestown to Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, I came to St. Louis. While in Pittsburgh, I looked at the headline of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It had two words: Nixon resigns. The President of the United States resigned office. Why? Well, not because there was compelling evidence to suggest he ordered a break-in into a building in Washington, D.C. He resigned because there was compelling evidence to suggest he was part of a conspiracy to cover up information. That's what led to his downfall, the cover-up, not the crime. This law is our assurance that there shall be no cover-ups, because this information, by our very philosophy, will be made open to the public. That is my background, and I will say one other thing by way of introduction to this law. And I want to say two different quotes. The first quote I want to offer to you comes from one of my colleagues. His name is Jeremiah Morgan. Jeremiah's position in our office is the Deputy Solicitor General. I have no idea what a Solicitor General did until I worked for the Attorney General. In short, the Solicitor General in the state of Missouri, in the office of the Attorney General, is the attorney that defends the interests of the state on cases before the appellate court. Jeremiah is the Deputy Solicitor General. He is a man of enormous integrity and great wisdom. And I had become a colleague of his as well as a friend. And one day we were in his office where he was giving counsel to somebody over a speakerphone. The person on the other end of the line knew that I was there. And at the end of the conversation, the person on the other end of the line says to Jeremiah, "So Jeremiah, if I do that, is it legal?" And Jeremiah's response, I think, was very instructive, because he said, "If you have to ask if it's legal, are you sure that's the course of action you want to pursue?" Jeremiah Morgan. The other quote comes from somebody who is the exact opposite of Jeremiah Morgan, the vaudevillian comedian W.C. Fields. Now, for those of you who may not know W.C. Fields, he came out of vaudeville, early film actor, did a lot of comedies, particularly associated with Mae West. And it was said of W.C. Fields that he never met a bottle of whiskey or a woman that he did not want to spend the night with. He led a colorful life. And at the end of his life, it goes that he became quite ill, and a friend went to visit W.C. Fields in the hospital, and upon walking into his hospital room there, he sees W.C. Fields with a Bible in his hand. And he says to W.C. Fields, "Well, Bill, I've never known you to be a man of God. Why at this time do you have a Bible in your hand?" And W.C. Fields responded, as only he could, "I'm looking for loopholes." Jeremiah Morgan. If you have to ask if that's the way you want to proceed, are you sure that's the course of action you want to pursue? W.C. Fields, are we looking for loopholes? Within those two quotes, we can have the canvas in which we're going to paint the discussion of the Sunshine Law. I want those quotes to echo through your mind, through the course of your journey in trying to grasp the Sunshine Law and how to respond to it. That's my background. That's my relevance. So let's get on to the law. It begins on page 45 in your booklets. Those of you who are listening can get access to Sunshine Law booklets. I'll leave some here at the Taney County Courthouse. You can also go online and get them at ago.mo.gov. You can order all the publications you want. We will send them to you. I like to say free, but the fact of the matter is you paid for them. You're taxpayers. On page 45, the law begins. Whenever a legislative body is going to create new legislation, they have to define certain terms so we know what we're talking about. And so they define those terms beginning on page 45, and they tell us what is public business, what is a public governmental body. Then we turn to page 46, we see the definition of a quasi-public governmental body. On page 47, what is a public meeting, what is a public record, and on page 48, they end the definitions with what is a public vote. The very next piece of information that they give to us is the most important information when it comes to interpreting this law and how we are to approach it. Section 610.011, that a liberal construction of the law is to be our public policy, and exceptions shall be strictly construed to promote this policy. In short, they are saying to us, if you have a record, you presume it is open for people to see. If you have a meeting, you presume it is open for people to attend. Unless you can find an exception in the Sunshine Law, and there are 22 of them, and I'll talk about them in a moment, that allows you or compels you to close that information pursuant to that statute. And then when you look at that statute, you must define it in the narrowest terms, not the broadest. We are looking for a means to keep as much open as we can. And that shall be our philosophy in both public records as well as public meetings. Now, when I travel the state, and as I said, I've given this presentation well over 200 times, I have encountered every different type of individual imaginable, and they all have their own little perspective on this law. Some people say to me, I believe that we should conduct ourselves like this. If you've got nothing to hide, you hide nothing. You just keep everything open. They could make a very good philosophical argument on that particular philosophy. But I want to share with you a real-life situation that occurred that caused me to rethink that philosophy. I was giving this presentation in a county south of St. Louis, on the eastern part of the state. It was a large gathering, not unlike this one, that had public governmental officials there, as well as a lot of citizens. At the end of the meeting, a gentleman approaches me and he says, I need to ask your guidance on something. He said, 3 nights ago, I was appointed to our fire district board. And last night, I went to my very first meeting, and we went into a closed session under the law. We had to discuss an employee. And the law allows for you to go into a closed session to do that. Section 610.021, subsection 3. For hiring, firing, disciplining, or promoting an employee, you may go into a closed session. So they did. And he said, I need to know what will be made available from that closed session to the public. And I said, if you go into a closed session under that provision of the law states that any vote that's taken in that closed session must be a roll call vote. Your name will be assigned to a yes or a no, depending on the proposition that took place in that closed session. He said, all right. And I said, and that vote must be made available. Make it available within 72 hours of the vote, and in the interim, you advise the person of the outcome. Don't let them read it in the newspaper. You tell them. You have 72 hours to do that, and then if somebody wants to know that vote, you must make it available within that 72 hours. He said, okay, so my vote will be a public record if somebody asks for it. I said, that's correct. He said, what about the discussion? I said, that's good. He said, that's good. And when I paused, he said, Tom, this is a small community. And I know this fireman that we're talking about, and he's a good guy. His kids go to school with my kids, Tom. But I had to say some things in that closed session germane to the facts that were likely to cause my colleagues to remove him. But I don't want that conversation bandied about this town, because that man is going to suffer enough when he goes home and he tells his wife, honey, I lost my job. That was the first moment I had a glimpse into the difficulty of being a member of a public governmental body, because I have never been that member. I know what they do by proxy, but I've never sat in their seats. I've never walked an inch in their shoes. So for a moment I said, how would I respond if I had to sit on that fire district board and I had to have a discussion about this guy who's a good guy, his kids go to school with my kids, in an open forum? Got nothing to hide? Hide nothing. You heard me say I lived in New York and Los Angeles for 25 years. I'm not unaccustomed to walking down the street with sinners. On a few occasions in my misspent youth, I might have joined them in their folly. So I have an awareness that we all have human frailties and weaknesses. It tends to make me more compassionate towards my fellow man. I hope that I've gotten wiser with age. But if I'm sitting on that fire district board and I have this compassion for my fellow man and I'm very uncomfortable airing the dirty laundry in a public arena because he is a good guy and his kids go to school with my kids, what might I do? I might sandbag, I might hold back, I might not speak with absolute candor. And maybe no action would be taken. And then what have I done? I've released on my public, the people that I'm supposed to protect and defend, a man who at the time of an emergency could be alcohol impaired, because that was the issue. And now I have not served my public very well by allowing that to happen. So, to those who would say, everything must be open, I say, not so fast. And I hope that that is at least an interesting argument for the importance of closing certain discussions. Because we can close the discussion, and you can still hold me accountable for the vote. How did I vote on this action? You go ahead and you make a determination of who I am and what I did based on that vote. But you don't need to know all the details that went into it. Having said that, I now want to share with you another excerpt from my life of being a school teacher. And I remember very clearly, I was discussing with my students the Arthur Miller play, The Crucible. It deals with the Salem witch trials. And I said to my students, what's the opposite of love? And they all said, hate. I said, what about fear? Isn't it fear that's in play in this particular play by Arthur Miller? It's fear. They don't know who the witches are. People are making allegations about them. People are afraid that if I don't side with all the majority, they're going to call me a witch. And the next thing you know, I'm going to be stoned or hung. Fear caused people to respond in the least humane way. Fear. And so I say to anyone who will hear me about closed sessions, understand that whenever you close that door, you invite fear into the equation, because the public doesn't know. So we want to be very, very judicious when we decide we have to serve the public best by closing certain records or by closing certain discussions. And be very, very judicious to only do it when it is absolutely necessary, so that no one can draw a false assumption about who you are or what you are doing. Transparency invites a relationship that is good for everyone. But it is awkward, and it can be inconvenient, and I recognize that. Now, some people will say to me that the Sunshine Law is their means of telling you how to do your job. This gives us the authority to tell you how to do your job. It does not. It gives you the opportunity to observe the good job that we are doing. That's what the Sunshine Law allows of you. So how does it give you the opportunity to observe the good job that you're doing? Well, let's go to page 49, section 610.020. All public governmental bodies shall give a notice of the time and the date and the place of each meeting and a tentative agenda in a manner reasonably calculated to advise the public of the matters to be considered. We're going to advise the public that we're meeting, and here's when, and here's where, and here's what we're going to talk about. Come on. As I travel the state, I invariably look at the posted agendas of every place that I'm going to. And invariably, I have found little cause for concern when it comes to the open items on the agenda. Where I have seen some reason to be concerned is when it gets to the bottom of that document. I have seen this too often. And will close pursuant to the Sunshine Law, or may close pursuant to section 610.021. And then they go on about their business. Well, that's not complying with the law. So what do we have to do? Let's go to page 27. On page 27, we have some attorney general opinions. One of those opinions is the second one down. It's opinion number 68-95. And they're addressing, what do you have to do in order to go into a closed session to let the people know what it is that you're going to be talking about? Reference to the number of the relevant subdivision in section 610.021's list of exceptions to openness is sufficient to meet the requirement of the Sunshine Law, which requires a public body to announce the reason for closing a meeting. You're going to do it both orally as well as on your document. You're going to say, we will enter into a closed session pursuant to 610.021 subsection 1. That would tell them it's going to be a matter of legal discussion. 610.021.2 would be a matter of real estate discussion. 610.021.3 would be a matter of personnel. And there's 22 altogether of those. Now, here's an interesting question that has come to me on many occasions. I'm going to use a municipal body because it's easy to use the body to make the example I want. I will have a clerk for a municipality come to me and say something like, the mayor has instructed me to place on every agenda at the bottom, may go into executive session pursuant to 610.021 sub 1, sub 2, sub 3, legal real estate personnel. We put it on every document just in case. And then that clerk will say to me, is that legal? Ah, Jeremiah Morgan, where are you, lad? Because I've worked with so many attorneys, I've learned to actually speak like them sometimes. And I will say to that clerk, it's not illegal. It's not illegal. And yet I will then go on to say, but there is a reason why our mothers taught us the fable of the boy who cried wolf. And I will point out to this clerk, when you post a document that has the same exceptions for why you may go into a closed meeting, for every meeting that you're going to have, somebody one day is going to look at that document and go, you're crying wolf, I don't believe that. And now you have posted a document that will have eroded integrity. And if people will start to doubt the integrity of that piece of paper, it will not be a quantum leap for them to start to doubt your integrity. So those who want to do that just because they want to be safe, they want to just in case this comes up, I say, be very careful about doing that. You may not be violating the law, but you could be doing something that is much harsher on the way that people are going to judge you as a member of a public governmental body. So keep that in mind, and notice that I want you to look at this law, and this is kind of a new approach, I think. I want us to look at this law as the least common standard of good government. Comply with this law, and that's a good thing. Exceed it, it's even better. And let me give you an example again from my days of teaching school. I told you, I taught at a private school. The moms and dads who sent their sons and daughters to this school paid a boatload of money for their children to have the privilege of a private education. But at the end of the 4 years, those students were all ready to go to college, and they all went to college. That wasn't an issue. In my American literature class, I gave homework every single day. It made me very popular with the children. And that homework invariably involved reading a passage and answering the question that I would give to them and authoring for me a short essay in response. To get an idea if their thought processes were good, if they could articulate a thought in a cogent fashion. Every student did their homework in Durkin's class because if they didn't, I would approach them. And I would look them right in the face and I'd say, do you understand that you have cost your mother a Mercedes-Benz for you to be here? Do your homework. Or I'm telling mom. Always got a good response. My kids did their homework. They complied with the least standard of the law. And yet it was very evident to me the very next day when I was reading those essays which students complied with the law while simultaneously listening to an iPod, sending text messages, talking on their cell phones, watching a DVD. It was very evident in that essay that I didn't get their full attention. It was equally evident to me the students who gave to me a document that says, Mr. Durkin, this is me at my very best. It was those latter students who came to me in the spring of their senior year and said, Mr. Durkin, I have been accepted into the university of my choice. I always ask people, which student do you see yourself as? The least common denominator? Or exceeding it. And I invite us to exceed it at all costs. What else are the people entitled to know? Let's go back to this thing about posting an agenda and go to page 50. Because sometimes people will say to me, Tom, if you've got to post it 24 hours in advance, stuff happens. Rivers rise. Frost comes. Ice storms come. Any number of circumstances present themselves. And it would not be good of us to wait. We must act immediately to serve the people. How do we do that in compliance with the Sunshine Law? Look at number 2. It does state that a notice conforming with all the requirements of subsection 1 shall be given at least 24 hours in advance, exclusive of weekends and holidays when a facility is closed. Go to line 4. Unless, for good cause, such notice is impossible or impractical, in which case as much notice as is reasonably possible shall be given. In keeping with that same philosophy, let's go to number 4. When it is necessary to hold a meeting on less than 24 hours' notice, or at a place that is not reasonably accessible to the public, or at a time that is not reasonably convenient to the public, the nature of those two words again, good cause, justifying that departure from the normal requirements shall be stated in the minutes. When we have to act expeditiously, in deviation from the 24 hours' notice, then we will put in the minutes the reason why we deviated, and you can hold me accountable for that reason. Have I served you well in dealing with this expeditiously? Hold me accountable for that reasoning, but the law allowed me to do it for good cause. Now, here's the rub. Nothing in this book, nor in Black's Law Dictionary, will identify every possible nuance of good cause. Good cause is interpretable. So now I'm going to give you Tom Durkin's opinion. This is not Chris Koster's opinion. This is not the Sunshine Law or Black's Law. This is Tom Durkin saying, you make sure that good cause comes much closer to that word emergency than it comes to the word convenient. Because what I see so often is, well, Bill brought it up. Let's just go ahead and deal with it. No, that's convenience. That can wait for the next meeting. Let us give thought to what we need to discuss. And if it is not an emergency, let us stick to that agenda that we told the people we were going to be dealing with. And so we want to make emergency the word that we're going to be looking for. And yet, I must say, emergency is also interpretable. You ask my daughter in college, what's an emergency? Dad, I lost my cell phone. It's an emergency. I've got to find it. We've got to go get another cell phone today, Dad. It's an emergency. No, Emily. It's not an emergency. It's inconvenient. Because then you got to understand something, honey. Ezekiel, Elijah, Moses, Jesus, all got by without cell phones, sweetheart. And they still managed to get the word out. It will rely on our personal integrity as we try to discern the best use of those two words, good cause. But keep this in mind as you go down that journey. Let's make it very close to an emergency. All right, that's what the people are entitled to know. And I think that it was important that the legislature said, we're going to take into account that there can be deviations so that the public governmental body can continue to serve the people. Now, this is a beautiful community. But in some fashion, it's a small town. Jefferson City is 35,000 people. I consider it a small town. New York's a big town. L.A.'s a big town. These are small towns. And in a small town, I'm going to not tell you something you already know. Somebody's eyes are always watching you. And they're telling on you to us. The Attorney General a few months ago created a new position in the Division of Governmental Affairs. We have 9 divisions in our office, and Governmental Affairs is one of those divisions. And that is the division that is likely to handle any Sunshine Law inquiries. And so he created a new position that he calls Sunshine Law Coordinator. So if there's any inquiries regarding the Sunshine Law, they are channeled through this one person, and then she will disseminate it to the appropriate person who can handle it. But all of us then can go to that one person and say, have you had any inquiries on this? And they can tell us. So it's really been a benefit to our office, and I'm delighted we have this position. Well, this position now receives in excess of 100 inquiries a month from interested parties, over for over 1,000 years. Easy to do the math. That's a lot of inquiries, because not all of them, no. None of them can ever be answered with a yes or a no. And some of them take a considerable amount of time to try to address. I'm going to share with you one of those inquiries. In my town, the mayor, a councilman, and a police officer meet regularly at a local diner, and they discuss city business. I believe this is a violation of the Sunshine Law, and I want to know what your office is going to do about it.
Wow.
This lady did not mince any words. Probably not a graduate of that finishing school of diplomacy, but she made her point. And I want to speak to that point. And in order to speak to that point, let me tell you what we did. We found out that the mayor and the councilman were part of a public governmental body, and it was a body of five. The police officer just was one of their friends joining them for coffee at the diner. He was not a member of the public governmental body. So we have two out of five members of a public governmental body discussing public business in an open arena. Let's go to page 13. Does the Sunshine Law apply to a meeting of members of a public governmental body where public business is discussed but a quorum is not present? Technically, the Sunshine Law defines a meeting as a majority or quorum of the members of the public governmental body. Thus, if less than a quorum of the body meets to discuss public business, it is not a meeting under the definition of the Sunshine Law. Okay, in this case, no violation here, ma'am, for those two people to come and have coffee every day at the Bluebird Diner and discuss public business. They don't have a quorum. It can't be a public meeting. And yet, I caution us to look at the third paragraph. It also must be remembered that the Sunshine Law will apply to meetings of groups with less than a quorum when the entity is deliberately attempting to evade the Sunshine Law. And we've given case law that substantiates how the judges are going to view that type of behavior, and it's not going to be favorable. People will say, well, now how would they do that, Tom? Well, it's real simple. The mayor meets with Councilman number one for coffee on Monday, and Councilman two on Tuesday, and Councilman three on Wednesday, and Councilman four on Thursday, and on Friday, they get together and magically pass the council budget, the city budget, without discussion. Somebody brings a charge against them about not playing according to Hoyle, it is likely a judge is going to say, you're right, that's a violation of the Sunshine Law. So we have to be very careful to not hear W.C. Fields in our minds saying, I'm looking for loopholes. It will not play well in our future. And now it really does beg this question. Let's just take a moment to assess who we are and what we have been placed in a position to do. And as a member of a public governmental body, we have been placed in a position of civic responsibility. And let me tell you how I believe that applied to me in my life as a school teacher. When I taught school in Burbank, California, there are 107,000 people, approximately, in the city of Burbank. In the 8 years that I taught high school in Burbank, there was not an occasion when I was out in that community, at the mall, the media center, the movies, having dinner, there was not an occasion where I didn't encounter one of my current students, a former student, or a parent of students. I still have this vision of walking down the mall, and hearing a voice from my back going, Mr. Durkin, what are you doing here? As if teachers spend their entire lives in a small room with a red pen circling subject-verb agreement. We have no need for clothing or social lives. We're teachers. What are you doing here? Knowing that that was the community and the environment in which I lived, I grasped very early on that I could not do the following. I cannot come out of my favorite Irish pub on Friday night at 10 o'clock singing Danny Boy. Because Monday morning when I go to take attendance, somebody already has that on YouTube. And from the back of the classroom as I'm taking roll, I'm going to hear, oh, Danny Boy, the pipes, the pipes. And now I've lost the integrity of my classroom. Not because I did anything illegal or immoral, but because I allowed myself to be seen in a public light that did not shed the best possible image on me. And I didn't want that as a teacher, because I wanted to be able to go to my students and say, you will not outwork me. You will not conduct yourself better than I conduct myself. You will meet the standard that I set, and I will hold you accountable to that standard. So I had to be very careful about that standard. I am an imperfect man. But when it came to the responsibility that I had been given and that I freely accepted, I knew that the mantle of responsibility was a very high bar. And I say that to all of us who are in those positions. We have to act with integrity. We have to set the standard. We are the leaders. And that's what comes with the territory. Now, there's one other element to this law. There's a lot. But there's one that has been a particularly difficult issue. And it's a section of the law. You're going to find it on page 64. It begins on 63, but I'm going to read from page 64. And I'm going to call it the deer in the headlight segment of the law, because whenever I refer to this particular segment in the law, I invariably get a response back from my audience, like deer looking in the headlight. I had no idea. So now I'm going to tell you that this is the law. Item number two, section 610.028. Each public governmental body shall provide a reasonable written policy in compliance with the Sunshine Law, open to public inspection, regarding the release of information of any meeting, record, or vote. Each public governmental body is to create a document, a policy, that advises the public how to access information from that governmental body. And I'll just use Cole County where I live. That means that the Jefferson City Council must have a policy statement. The County Commission must have a policy statement. The Office of the Attorney General must have a policy statement. The Sheriff must have a policy statement. I'm going to share with you two things. First of all, for those of you who do not have access to the number of attorneys that I have, we have a template for a policy statement in the Sunshine Law book. You'll find it on page 38. And you can use that template as a guide to create your own policy statement. I'm going to share with you the policy statement for the Office of the Attorney General because I think it's instructive. It is not verbatim of what you're going to see on page 38. And I also want to take this opportunity to share with you a minor miracle. 182 attorneys got together, we came up with a policy statement, and we did it in a page and a half. We understand that the term legal brief is an oxymoron. Policy statement for the Office of the Attorney General. In accordance with the provisions of the Sunshine Law, the following is adopted as the policy statement for the Office of the Attorney General. Number one, that the Deputy Attorney General is appointed custodian of the records for the Office of the Attorney General. And such custodian is located in the Supreme Court building, and then we give the address. You want to contact our custodian of records? Here's where you'll find them. Number two, that the custodian shall make public records available for inspection and copying during regular business hours at the Supreme Court building. We're not a 24/7 operation. You want to come by and look at records, you want to come by and give us a Sunshine Law request, you come by when we're open. Number three, that the custodian shall respond to all requests for access to or copies of a public record within the time period provided by statute. And what is that time period? Statute says that the custodian shall respond as soon as possible, and in no event later than the third business day following receipt of the request. That's why it's important to timestamp these things, so that if you have a timestamp that says it arrived on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that's your respond day. But what does respond mean? Well, it's a very literal thing. And there's actually a duality taking place here, because the law says you will respond as soon as possible. And then it goes on to say, and in no event later than the third business day. And respond means that you must acknowledge that request, and you must act on it as soon as possible. Now, if you can provide that document within 30 minutes, you do that. That's as soon as possible. But here's the reality in many cases, and I'll use our office as a good example. The custodian of records for our office, the Deputy Attorney General, is a gentleman by the name of Judge Joseph Dandurand. And his office is in the Supreme Court building in Jefferson City. Some records are in that building. Many of them are down the street in the archives. But we also have satellite offices in Kansas City, in Springfield, in Cape Girardeau, in St. Louis. It is not unusual then for us to issue a letter to the person seeking Sunshine Law, records under the Sunshine Law, and say, we're in receipt of your records request pursuant to the Sunshine Law, and we anticipate having these records available, and we tell them, 10 days. If at day 9 and a half we still don't have them for whatever reason, then it is our responsibility to recontact them and say, we need to extend this, and I don't know what language we use, but we need another 10 days. There is nothing in the Sunshine Law that says, and every request must be complied with within 30 days, or 45 days, or 60. It says that you must respond as soon as possible. You must exercise due diligence in your response to these requests. And that is what we do. Now, it's interesting because, here again, I'm hearing W.C. Fields in the back of my mind. I had a reporter contact me from South Central Missouri, and he said, Tom, I recently contacted our sheriff. And from the conversation, I just divined that maybe the sheriff and this reporter did not have a love fest of a relationship. So the reporter says, I just contacted a sheriff, and I asked him for a record that I know he has, and the sheriff said, well, I got 72 hours to get you that record, and that's when you're going to get it, hour 72. The sheriff really didn't sound that way, but in my head he sounded that way. And so I said, okay, let me see what I can do. And so I called the sheriff, and actually I had met the sheriff when he was here in Branson attending the sheriff's convention. And I said, Sheriff, the law states that you must reply and respond as soon as possible, and in no event later than 72 hours. And I said, Sheriff, you know and I know you have that record, and you could give that to him now. And that's what the law is going to tell you to do, because that's as soon as possible. And I said, Sheriff, you know, I've been in this world a while, and I understand the dynamics of relationships. In fact, Sheriff, I want to share with you something very confidentially. Oh, my gosh, I'm on the internet. I'm going to say what I'm about to say. All right, well, here we go. I'm one of five children, and I have a sister that I do not particularly get along with. We pretend to get along at the holidays for the sake of the family. But confidentially, I'm still looking for the adoption papers because my parents could not have brought her into this world. If I can have a sister that I do not get along with, it is very evident to me that in your community there may be someone who may not like you, and the feeling could be mutual. It is then that I invite us to get along for the sake of the family. And it is then that I would ask you to consider this. By complying with their records request, you are not bowing down to them. You are paying homage to this law that we revere, that is so much a part of our democracy. And I hope that helps. Because in the end, you still have to comply. I'm trying to give you a spoonful of sugar. Let the medicine go down. Thank you, Mary Poppins. Our policy statement also reads the following. That the fee which may be charged for access to or furnishing copies of public records shall be as follows. A fee of $40 per hour for activities performed by attorneys. A fee of $20 per hour for activities performed by other staff, including time required to locate, prepare, and copy responsive documents. Sometimes I read that portion of the policy statement, and particularly in a small rural area, and people will gasp, and they say, $40 an hour for an attorney? And I just smile and I say, ma'am, sir, if you know an attorney who will work for you for less than $40 an hour, would you let me know? Because I'm getting gift certificates from them. Hand them out to the kids at Christmas. Good legal advice for $40 an hour. The $20 an hour, I want to talk about that. This is the policy statement for our office. The law reads, I'm not giving you an exact quote, but I'm getting real close about these fee schedules, that the fee which may be charged shall be the average salary of the least salaried employee capable of complying with the records request. We can't use the IT director to run the Xerox machine and bill it out at the higher salary. But that salary is going to be determined based on where you live. And the salary schedule for Taney County might be different from Stone County. It might be different from Greene County, St. Louis, Cole, Jackson County. So you have to determine what that fee schedule is. But I want you to put it in there so that people will know that there could be a cost. And here's the cost. And here's what's going to be involved in processing this. Because we could be billing you at a certain hourly rate for staff time, including time required to locate, prepare, and copy responsive documents. What I'm about to say next is a bit uncomfortable, but it needs to be said because I know that it occurs. You know, those people who may not like us, sometimes, and I've seen this happen, or at least I believe this is the reason for it, people will use the Sunshine Law as a means of extracting their pound of flesh from you. It is a bludgeoning stick that they can use because they do not like you. So by golly, I'm going to make your life difficult. When that occurs, I have two responses. The first is this, and I would say it to the individual who would do this, who would use this law as a bludgeoning stick. Shame on you. And to those who have to respond to that, I would say, you must do your job. You must pay homage to this law that we revere. But you are entitled to bill them for it. But not if you don't have a policy statement that says, here's what it's going to cost you to do this. You're not only allowed to bill them for it, but let's see what else that we have to say here. Documents may be furnished without charge or at a reduced charge when the Office of the Attorney General determines that a waiver or a reduction of fee is in the public interest and not primarily in the commercial interest of the requester. In our office, I did not know what our policy was exact or how we implemented our policy. I knew what the words were. So I went to one of our attorneys who works on Sunshine Law requests within the last month, and I said to her, do we ever bill people for this? And she said, oh yeah, Tom, we have to. We, as responsible stewards of the public treasure that we have as part of our budget, we have to be responsible. I said, well, give me one that we've had to bill for that's a pretty high number. She said $900 because it was a very expensive case. It involved a lot of time. We had to have attorneys look at that to see if there's anything in that case that needed to be redacted, that couldn't be shared. Took a lot of time. And a lot of Xeroxing. And it was your tax dollars. And so we said, okay, we're going to provide it. That's a lot. But it's going to cost you. Are there occasions where we can zip something off to a member of the press or somebody else and it takes us a few minutes and we don't charge? Sure, I'll bet that happens too. That's something you're going to have to determine. But you need to determine that very, very judiciously. Because we do not want to ever give the impression that the member of the media that we like gets it for free, and the media member that we do not like has to pay for it. And I'll give you an example of a school district that had, apparently they had a building project, and two different entities asked for a lot of information regarding that building project. And for one of those persons, they said, you may have it gratis, free. And to the other, they said, it's going to cost you $150, here's the invoice, here's how we came up with that. Well, guess which one contacted our office? And we saw it and said, boy, there seems to be a discrepancy here. We need to at least write a letter to this school board and ask them what's going on. And so then the school board had to take our letter to their private law firm that represents them. And that law firm billed them $300 to write a letter back to us. This is a school board that has not acted very prudently in terms of the public trust. Because they created they created an environment where somebody got it for free and somebody had to pay, and the person who had to pay came to us, and now it costs the school board not just the $150, cost them $300 for legal advice. So we want to be very judicious when we determine how we're going to implement our policy. And because so often it is members of the press who want this information, I will say this, and I always say it publicly, the press is no less nor any more entitled to this information. They have the same access of any person who asks. And all persons shall be treated in accordance with the law. And finally, we say the following, that the above fees may be required to be paid in advance. And I can tell you in my travels throughout this state, I have seen on more than one occasion instances where people have requested information and the well-intended custodian of records said, here's the invoice, we'll do a COD. And on delivery day, the person comes in and they relook at the invoice and they look at the documents and they say, you know, I really don't need them. Well, now it's too late. We've already done it. What are we going to do? So I'm going to invite you, and it is perfectly acceptable, for you to create that invoice and say, and we expect payment in advance, and then we will begin this process. And I know for a fact that there are custodians who do that, and at the end, if the number doesn't come up, in other words, if the person is overpaid, they issue a rebate. And the other side to that is that along the way they say, boy, this became far more complicated than we thought, it's going to cost us more. And then they go to that person. And before they finish it, they say, it has come to this. Do you still want all this information? In our office, the incoming attorneys, the freshman attorneys, invariably some of them get... It works in our office the way it works in the real world. It's this. New person always gets the job that nobody else wants. And in our office, one of those difficult jobs is to have to go down to the archives with disinfectant and gloves and go through the boxes to find which ones you want to respond to a sunshine law request. And those attorneys are generally down the hall from me. And two of them were looking at a volume of boxes. It would have covered a table 8 feet long. And I think there were five or six boxes on the table. And as I walked by them, I said, oh, sunshine law request. I can see what's going on here. And the guy said to me, he goes, you know, Tom, it is a sunshine law request. But what's really unfortunate is that the answer is in box one, and this person says they want all six boxes. And I said, well, they might not want to pay for six boxes if we tell them how much it's going to cost. Why don't you get back to them and make them be very aware of what the cost is going to be, and maybe they'll be able to limit what it is that they're seeking. And in fact, we did that, and that's exactly what happened. As soon as they saw, oh my God, this isn't free, let me think about this. Okay, here's exactly what I'm looking for. And it not only narrowed the request, but it gave the person exactly what they're looking for so that they didn't have to go through all these volumes at a substantially lower cost. So that's the way it worked in our office, and I'll invite you to consider something like that as well. I have now given you an overview of this law, and we're approaching the one-hour period, and I'm a teacher. Bell goes off in an hour. So I've got to be wrapped up by the time, give you your homework, and send you on your way. So I want to acknowledge a couple of things, and let me start with this. Before I came down here, I was mindful that in Taney County there had been some issues that have surfaced involving local governmental bodies. I'm aware of those issues. My purpose in being here is as a teacher. I'm not an attorney, and I will never be a judge. So those issues, which I am mindful of, will find their own solution in the course of time, however they're going to be resolved. But I'm not here to remedy those situations. I'm here to accept the fact that I'm aware that they exist. It's kind of like, you ever heard the expression, the elephant in the kitchen? The elephant in the kitchen is this. It's the uncle who comes to your house every Thanksgiving and gets drunk and disrupts the entire proceeding. And no one will acknowledge we got a drunk uncle who makes every Thanksgiving miserable. We just pretend it doesn't exist. Well, I'm not going to pretend that this doesn't exist. I know it does. But I have to tell you, that's not my purpose for being here. I hope that in what I've conveyed, it will address some of the concerns. I hope that in what I've conveyed, it will give us a guideline for us to conduct public business so that we can eliminate some of the consternation that happens whenever you're a member of a public governmental body and you're trying to take care of the needs of a large constituency. The Office of the Attorney General has a complaint form. You can contact us at ago.mo.gov. On the homepage, there's a Sunshine Law tab. You can click on that tab and say, file a complaint. It will go to the very learned attorneys in our Governmental Affairs Division, and you will get a response as soon as possible. Some of those responses can be handled expeditiously. Some of them are complicated. We do our level best to serve the public with efficiency and as responsibly and as quickly as we can, given our own limitations. So I wanted to be able to acknowledge that in a public format. I'm here to receive questions from you because sometimes all you need is some guidance in terms of a particular thing, and I'm happy to do that, and we can do that at the close of the meeting, and you're welcome to stay and see what anybody wants to ask me, or you're welcome to come up to me privately and ask me something, and I will stay here. I'd like to get home tonight for dinner in Jefferson City, and before the storm comes through that I heard about. Other than that, my time is yours. And now let me conclude with you something very personal. I have a nephew who just returned last week from his fourth tour in Iraq. And he wrote me today, and I read his email on my cell phone. He shared with me his fears and his concerns about being a soldier and being a man. And he touched me deeply with what he had to say. Four tours. And I've asked myself, why are we sending our young men and women off to war? And invariably the answer that comes back to me is this. They are going, and my nephew believes this, and that's why he went, to defend our freedom. So what's freedom? Well, one way to look at freedom is this. Freedom is any citizen's opportunity to fully participate in their government by being a member of a board, a body, or a commission. but it is equally their opportunity to observe what their government is doing freely. That's why we're sending young men and women off to preserve our freedom. And if we're going to be willing to send young men and women off to preserve our freedom and do battle, then we have to be willing to suffer some of the burdens of responding to this law, which at its basis is allowing citizens the opportunity to participate in their government. That's what my nephew's letter said to me today, and that's what I will share with you. If we're going to do that, then we must be willing to be inconvenienced for our part of serving freedom. It is an honor for me to be with people who have chosen to be officials in any capacity, to serve their fellow men, to take this road less traveled and make a difference. And it is equally an honor to be with citizens who just care passionately about their government, to show up at a meeting like this. You've given me a good day by the honor of your presence in this room. And for that, I thank you, and I am grateful. And that's all I got to say. Class dismissed.
If you have questions, you can ask them publicly. If you want, Tom will be here afterwards. So if you want to ask him one-on-one, that's great. I know you've got at least another hour here. If you guys have specific questions, otherwise we'll have the manuals, and we'll always have a supply here. Either the clerk's office, or the commission's office, or any elected official may have some. But on behalf of the commission, we want to say thanks for coming. Today's been great. So.
Thank you.
All right, that's it then.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Are there questions that you would like to pose to me at this point? Good students.
Disseminating the emails of public bodies, and I'll talk specifically as a school district, how do you decipher what's safe, what's not? When you look at the way it reads in the book, if you're emailing staff members, they don't really constitute a board.
You're posing an outstanding question, to which the ultimate answer is we don't have absolute case law to guide us. Let me just share with you, and I'm glad you brought it up because I failed to share this little piece of information with you. In the time that I've been in the Office of the Attorney General, 2 years, the Office of the Attorney General has filed 3 Sunshine Law lawsuits. 3, that's all. Because what did I say? Our priority is educate. And then mediate, Division of Governmental Affairs, try to get involved. Let's see that we can accommodate the wishes of the individual who has a concern. Or give clarity to questions like yours. The last lawsuit we filed deals with email. So let me read you the press release of the lawsuit, and we'll go from there. This press release was issued on March 14th, last month. In fact, a month ago today. Attorney General Koster seeks an injunction penalties against the City of Lebanon for Sunshine Law violations. Attorney General Chris Koster said today he has filed suit against the City of Lebanon for violating Missouri's open records law, commonly called Sunshine Laws. Also named in the suit are the city administrator, the city mayor, and the chief of police. Koster said in December 2010, the chief of police sent an email to some employees of the police department informing them that the city council had reversed a police board decision to discipline an employee and indicated his disagreement with that decision. A few days later, an open records request was made seeking the email and related documents. The city of Lebanon denied the Sunshine request, stating that the email was not a public record. In January 2011, the attorney general's office sent the city administrator a letter stating the emails sent on, received by, and retained on the city's computers are public records, and that the requested email must be disclosed under the Sunshine Law. The city continues to maintain that the email is not a public record. So now we're going to have litigation, and at the end of that litigation, a circuit judge is going to create case law that is either going to side with the city of Lebanon and say you do not have to release that, in which case our office will respond by saying, Your Honor, thank you for giving us case law to guide us. Or that judge is going to rule in favor of the Office of the Attorney General, in which case we will say, Your Honor, thank you for giving us case law to guide us. The Certainly in this instance where technology was used that was owned by a public governmental body and distributed from a member of that body to other members of the body, our view was that's open. Let us go back in time a few years ago before I worked for the Attorney General in the former governor's administration. A high-ranking member of the former governor's staff sent out an email to constituents seeking their support because they wanted to change the law that showed or that told how we are going to nominate judges for the appellate bench, the nonpartisan court plan is what it's called. So they sent out this email soliciting support from their constituency to change that particular law, and some member of the press got wind of it and said, I want to see all the email about that, and the former governor's office said, no, you're not entitled to see it. And the former attorney general said, yes, you are entitled to see it. Now, here was the complexity. The former governor had members of his staff that were part of the concern, so he had to get outside counsel. And the former attorney general recognized he was going to be running for governor, and he wanted to get outside counsel as well, so he got investigators to represent his interests. And they went at it for a while. And finally, as that case was going before Judge Richard Callahan in Cole County, the two parties came to a gentleman's agreement that they would release the documents. And so I think about 60,000 documents were released at attorney's fees cost of $1.5 million. And what's really unfortunate is that we got no case law. But certainly it seemed like those parties who were very skilled lawyers believed that we ought to open this up. For your specific situation, what I'm going to encourage you to do if you need absolute guidance is you need to contact our office, speak with one of our attorneys in governmental affairs, and ask them very specifically, because invariably if I go to them with that question, they're going to say to me, Tom, we handle it on a case-by-case basis. Who created it? Who disseminated it? Now, there is something I also want to bring to light here. The Secretary of State's office has a records retention policy. And certain records, as you know, must be maintained in compliance with those statutes. There are records that public bodies retain that are not have no influence by the Secretary of State's records retention. They just happen to have them. And in which case, what we have here is the definition of what is a public record. And it says that a public record is any record, whether written or electronically stored, retained by the body. That's what the definition says. Even if it's a record that the Secretary of State says you don't need to hang on to. If you've got it, the Sunshine Law says it is a public record. It could be open to exception based on the 22 provisions that allow you to not release that information. But the law says it's a public record. Now, yesterday I had a great conversation with an attorney from this area, and she made a compelling argument suggesting that there are certain things that aren't available to the public. And I hope that that all gets ferreted out. But if you'd like for me to give you a definitive answer, I cannot because I haven't been given that guidance. And I would just ask you if you want to seek further clarification, obviously you have your own legal counsel. It might be well to have your legal counsel talk to our attorneys in governmental affairs. Okay? Other thoughts or questions you'd like to offer at this time? Okay, students, you are now free to go to your next period. Well, that's all.